So in the 13th of chapter, excuse me, the 14th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is going to explain the same knowledge, or he has already explained the knowledge that he has just given to Uddhav. But the form is similar, but slightly different. So Krishna begins his explanation by saying, I shall declare to you again, Bhuya, Param Bhuya, Pravikshami. Again I shall declare to you the supreme wisdom, the best of all knowledge, knowing which all sages have attained the supreme perfection. So how important is this knowledge, that just by knowing this, it will help one so much surmount the modes of material nature, which will be the subject of this knowledge, and to attain the supreme destination. So implied also, if you don't know this, it's if you don't know that how much you're being controlled by Krishna's material energy as a conditioned soul, and unless you then it's very difficult to get out if you don't have that knowledge. In addition, when you see the workings of the material modes of material nature as you look at the world, you'll see that there's another level to reality, a completely different level to reality than what most people are experiencing. And while people think they're free and they're acting the way they act because they're choosing to act in that way, you'll see that actually they're being controlled and manipulated, just like the what? Puppets. Kaputli? Yes. Putulnats, the dancing dolls, are being pulled, the strings are being pulled and making us, and yet illusion is so powerful that we're thinking that we're doing everything, but actually we're being manipulated. So what is putting us, because the real essence is, what is putting us under the control of this illusion? This is like the essential question that's making us identify so much with our actions that we don't know how we're being manipulated. And this is the enjoying spirit, this Purusha Prakriti Stohi Vungte Prakriti Janiha, because we want to enjoy those things produced of the material nature, even though we're not actually capable of enjoying it. But that desire, the false ego, which is the central issue, or you could say the central issue is the turning our back on Krishna, and then we're presented with an illusory identity. So the cure of the turning the back, of having false ego, is to be in real ego. And the real ego is that we're Krishna's servant. And so one has to surrender to being Krishna's servant. So when we think that we're going, okay, I'm Krishna's servant, therefore now I'm going to do it, it's going to be nice, and then all the suffering caused by the modes of passion and ignorance are going to be removed. Well, if you're fully identified with Krishna's servant, they will be removed, but if you still have any lingering attachments to your body or anything else, that the world is going to, once I surrender to Krishna, everything is going to be, you know, everyone's just going to dance and take prasadam and walk our way, sing and merrily walk our way back to Godhead. If we have that kind of a imaginary expectation of what Krishna consciousness is, if we have a superficial, on the surface level, then we're going to get a very rude awakening at some point, because Krishna consciousness isn't it's on the material level, it's all not gulab jamuns and sweet rice. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we have to have bitter krela too, and something a little more spicy than we had hoped it was going to be served to us. That also happens. Does anyone notice this, or is it just me? You also noticed? Yeah. You also noticed? Yeah. You even? Maybe. Yeah. So Krishna, because it's, but then we say, then wait a second. When I read it, they said, chant Hare Krishna, be happy. When they hand me the card and everything, and your life will be sublime. They didn't tell me about the other parts. I bought a Bhagavad Gita from a van in Delhi that said, for an anxiety-free life, read Bhagavad Gita. And I thought, yes. But we didn't read all of the Bhagavad Gita. We read the part on the van. The whole part is that you have to be detached from this world. If you're attached to this world and want to be happy, it's just, if you're attached to yourself as being a happy living entity, it doesn't work either. You have to be attached to Krishna and his pleasure. Then whatever happens in the material world, let it happen. It's temporary. Tams the Tiksatsvabharata. The instruction manual is here. But you have to carefully read it, and not the parts you like. By becoming fixed in this knowledge, one can attain the transcendental nature like my own. Now Krishna is saying these things because he wants us to pay attention. He's glorifying the knowledge. Thus established, one is not born at the time of creation or disturbed at the time of dissolution. So it's powerful. Here he begins now. The total material substance called Brahman is the source of birth. And in that Brahman, aham bijapada pita, I impregnate, making possible the births of all living beings. So that in the material nature, the living entities are impregnated by the glance of the Lord. And then sava yona shukantaya mutaya sambhavatiya. It should be understood that in all species of life, O son of Kunti, are made possible by birth in the material nature. And I am the seed-giving father. So Krishna, we are Krishnas, mama eva angsa jiva loke, jiva bhuta sanatana. When the souls who need the material world treatment are placed in the prison house of the material world, immediately they're shackled, tied up, by the three modes of material nature. Material nature consists of three modes: goodness, passion, ignorance, the three strands of the rope. When the eternal living entity comes in contact with nature, what causes him to come in contact with material nature? In the previous chapter, bhunte prakriti, that is desire to enjoy. Almighty Amrajun, he becomes conditioned or controlled by these modes, and he identifies with the modes of material nature and everything that we heard in the previous chapter of Uddhava Gita. He identifies with all those conditionings, all those controlled qualities generated by the modes of material nature, according to his, like they have designer genes. So we have designer minds, designer bodies, all based on the modes of material nature, which we accept according to our guna karma. O sinless one, the mode of goodness, being purer than the others, is illuminating. And it frees one from all sinful reactions, but it's within the box of the material world. It's another conditioning. Those situated in that mode become conditioned by a sense of happiness and knowledge. So what is the control that's placed upon a soul who's conditioned by that? He's more happy than others. He has more knowledge than others. He knows that he is not of this world. He tends to become quite proud about it and think himself better than others. The mode of passion, and because it's in the material world, you become attached to those things, that the happiness, etc., those situations born out of the mode of goodness, and the attachment, even though the situation may be in goodness, the attachment brings one to the mode of passion. So immediately, so nothing is pure in the world, so even the goodness won't be pure because it will lead one to passion. And then to ignorance. Because pride, after all, isn't of goodness. The mode of passion is born of unlimited desires and longings. O son of Kunti, and because of this, the embodied living entity is bound to material food of action. So we desire something, and then we're bound to act in a fruitive way. So the subtle causes the gross. The gross is based on the subtle. So the embodied living entity, he's there, embodied with two material bodies, subtle and gross, and the mode of passion is pushing him on both subtle and gross level to act in fruitive ways. And I need, if I don't have this, how will I go on? Oh, son of Bharata, know that the mode of darkness, born of ignorance, is the delusion of all embodied living entities. So beyond that deep delusion, the anger that comes from the frustration born of the fruit of desire, the ignorance born of passion, the results of the mode of ignorance, madness, indolence means laziness, alasya, laziness, you know what? Laziness. You can't do it when you're giving the class, but you can do it when you're listening to the class. Although I do know of people who did have fall asleep giving class. No, because they're not preaching intensely, because intensely means the mode of passion. This is the mode of ignorance. Oh, you mean generally speaking, when we're giving class, we don't fall asleep. Oh, I see what you mean. Yes, because of that sincere. The mode of goodness, so at least there is some fruit from the activities born of the mode of passion. So those can be offered to Krishna. But the mode of ignorance, with these fruits of ignorance covering one's knowledge, madness results. So you can't offer madness to Krishna. The mode of goodness conditions one. So this is the result. So it said the mood of one. So we just heard the mood of one in goodness, passion, ignorance. And here's the result of it. Conditions one to happiness, passion conditions one to fruitive actions, and ignorance covering one's knowledge binds one to madness. And when you're mad, crazy, there's nothing you can do. Sanjayate gives birth to these things and bound. And then you always think this is right and I'm correct and I see things as they are and this is, there's no other choice. How else could I have done what I did? It's obvious, everyone would do the same. This is the mode of ignorance and passion. Very little freedom. Sometimes the mode of goodness becomes prominent, defeating the modes of passion and ignorance. Then we feel very relieved and we feel, oh, now I understand how I should act, and now all I have to do is act like this. And then ignorance covered over passion. Sometimes the mode of passion defeats goodness and ignorance, and other times ignorance defeats goodness and passion. In this way, there is always competition for supremacy. So no, you don't know what's going to happen next, practically. And of course, the way out of that is to be predominantly, to increase the predominance of the mode of goodness. But still passion sometimes comes in ignorance, but to get really predominantly, that's the way out of that one. The manifestation of the mode of goodness can be experienced when all the gates of the body are illuminated by knowledge. They're acting properly and acting properly and not passionately and not ignorantly. O chief of the Bharatas, when there's an increase in the mode of passion, the symptoms of great attachment. And we heard there were some very, very powerful descriptions in that Uddhava Gita chapter, that was 25, of what that is. The senses won't give up their objects. Fruit of activities, this is a symptom of the mode of passion. Intense endeavor, uncontrollable desire and hankering develops. Attachment, great attachment, fruit of work, I want, I'm going to work hard to get that fruit. Intense endeavor. Why is it called fruit of work, by the way? Well, that's the English translation of it. Why is it called fruitive? Yes, but what? Yes, it's fruitive. But why? What is the? What picture comes to mind?
Enjoying the fruit.
We plant a tree and cultivate it, and then it brings in form of our action, and then it brings a fruit which we enjoy.
The fruit is what we want. We don't want to plant a tree. We don't want to weed it. We don't want to prune it. We don't want to get rid of all the bugs. We want the fruit. But because we want the fruit, we have to go through all this labor to get the thing that we actually want. What kind of a fruit is it? Huh? But what kind of a fruit do we plant? What do we want? I was thinking of mango myself. Sometimes in Vrindavan in the winter you want a good apple too. So you have to go, so much work you have to do and wait so long. And then and this problem happens and you have to do that. All I wanted was some mangoes or some apples or something like that. So much work and all you want is the fruit. That's fruit of work. You have the job 9 to 5, 9 to 5, 9 to 8, 9 to 9. And you're working so much anxiety and the boss, and you have to have this creature known as a boss who beats you all the time and criticizes you and talks, and then your fellow workers. Has anyone ever worked in an office? And then the fellow workers, they talk about you and they make fun of you, and they, if you're not just like them, and they put pressure on you to talk about the lowest things and eat lower. Today's my birthday here, have a piece of grasshopper pie or something. You don't want to eat it? She doesn't want to eat it. So, yeah, a job. Was it fun having a job? No. Something like 9 to 5 prison. No one wants to be there. And they say TGIF. That stands for thank God it's Friday, because it's over, at least in the United States. So that's what they're thanking God, to let them out of prison. But why do they, fruit of want, I need this. And the way society is set up is based on push you, buy this, therefore you need the money, therefore you need the job, therefore you need to suffer. So uncontrollable desire and hankering. When there's an increase in the mode of ignorance, O son of Kuru, darkness, inertia, madness, and illusion are manifest. When one dies, so that's what happens. But then, ultimately, one dies. Where does one go? In goodness, he attains to the pure higher planets of the great sages. Tadottama vidam lokam amalam patipadyate. This is what he attains. The embodied soul who acts in goodness, he goes upward. When one dies in the mode of passion, he takes birth among those engaged in fruitive activities, as in Uddhava Gita, on earth again. And you have to go through it all again. You have to be a teenager again. I always say that because once I was giving class in New Zealand, and for some reason I was inspired to ask the devotees, what is the worst thing can you imagine happening to you again? And one devotee raised his hand and said, being a teenager. Because one has such unlimited, heavy desires. He takes birth amongst those engaged in fruitive activities, and when one dies in the mode of ignorance, he takes birth in the animal kingdom. Such suffering. The results of pious action is pure. One acts properly. Sukrita. Sukriti. Piety. Is said to be in the mode of goodness. But action done in the mode of passion results in misery. And action performed in the mode of ignorance results in foolishness. So ignorant action is ignorant, and you get more ignorance out of it. Foolishness. It fools you. It makes you think that something that's clearly going to cause you suffering is going to bring you happiness. From the mode of goodness, real knowledge develops. That's satvat sanjayate jnanam rajaso lobha eva cha. From the mode of passion, greed develops. And from the mode of ignorance, pramada moha, madness and illusion develops from passion, from ignorance. Bhavato jnanam eva cha. So this is like the documentation for the material world, the instruction manual. If you do this, this is going to happen. You want to program your life? Well, program it in this way, and this will happen. If you program it in this way, this will happen. If you program in ignorance, this is going to happen. Those situated in the mode of goodness gradually go upward to the higher planets. Those in the mode of passion live on the earthly planets, and those in the abominable mode of ignorance go down to the hellish worlds. Jaghanya guna, ignorance, abominable. When one properly sees that in all activities, and this was the conclusion really, that what Krishna started with, that there's nothing else going on in this world other than the modes. Don't be fooled. It's only the modes. There's nothing else going on. When one properly sees that in all activities no other performer is at work than these modes of nature, and everyone is being beaten by the whips of the modes and forced to act completely in alien ways to who they actually are. And, so if you know that, and such a person knows the Supreme Lord, who is transcendental to all these modes, he attains my spiritual nature. Because he's not going to work in that way, he's going to work in relationship to the Supreme Lord, and a relationship to the Supreme Lord means in his service, because that is our relationship with the Supreme Lord. We are his servants. When the embodied being is... So someone may say, well, you say that. Well, how do you know that that's true? Well, and then we say, mama eva angsa jiva loke. They say, well, you're quoting the same book to prove the truth of the book. So how do you really know that that's who you are as a servant of Krishna? What do we say then? How do you really know? Never mind them. The fan? How do you really know that that's who you are? Okay, what's the other part? That was the part I was more interested in. Experience of what? Okay, so when we try to live as the master of the world, we get one result, which is very unnatural, the frustration, and we try to serve Krishna, we get another result. That's what I understood you. He's saying, yeah? How do you know? Oh, yes.
To seeing this modes of material nature working under which we can trust the book, by the very things that happen, we are so powerful.
So the book, yes? Is that why you? The book is why you accept it? Also, so much. It's not only this point in the book, but we see that the material world, 15th chapter, of course we're only up to the 14th chapter, is it? So we don't know what happens in the 15th chapter, but this world is described as a reflection, and here, in this world, I don't think of myself as Krishna's servant. In the reflective world, I think of myself as the master, also in the 13th chapter with that verse. So it gives us a complete picture that here in this world, I don't want to act as a servant of Krishna. I unnaturally, which is the conclusion, even though I naturally think myself as the master under the Maya, but the results are never what I want. I just jump around in this illusory reflected tree of material existence. And hope is always some hope, my happiness is always somewhere else. So as we're saying, and also Guru Prabhu was saying that, yeah, we gradually, when we see that this instruction is quite real and it works, then I tend to trust the other. And we see that if this is a reflection with me seeing myself as the center, as the master, as the enjoyer and the controller, then when I understand the analogy, or rather the metaphor of that this is a reflection, this material world is a reflection of something. It's not completely illusory. It's a reflection of something. Therefore, the reflection resembles reality. So what is this material world resembling? So it's resembling the spiritual world. So there is an enjoyer in the material world, and I'm thinking it's me, but in reality that enjoyer must exist, and that is Krishna. So we piece together our view of reality, and the conclusion we come to is what the Bhagavad Gita says, is that we are actually eternal, that we're not the body, we're eternal, and we're eternally Krishna's servants. And when we begin to act in that way, the release of the material energy occurs, release from our grips. And then we can experience more of our relationship with Krishna, our eternal relationship with Krishna. And we chant Hare Krishna, and there's a different flavor that comes from that. We come to Vrindavan, there's a different flavor. We buy a big flat in Vrindavan, in an apartment building, to enjoy luxurious spiritual life, and we miss the point. We can maybe get some point, but we miss the real point that Vrindavan is not the material world, and the material world is meant for my pleasure, so I think, but Vrindavan is not the material world, it's meant for the pleasure of Krishna. And Vrindavan, I was just reading a few days ago, Vrindavan is actually not different from Srimati Radharani, it's an expansion of Srimati Radharani. Of course, it's also Balaram, Sandini Shakti, but it's Radharani, and Radharani is not meant for our pleasure. Radharani is meant for Krishna's pleasure. So we can't be in Vrindavan until we get some glimpses of this, and we can't really be in Vrindavan until we give up this material modes of material nature, and we notice how I'm pushing them away like they're fog and smoke. To give up the modes of material nature, and we have to become established as Krishna's servant, and not only as Krishna's servant, but the servant of the servant, Gopi Bhakta Pada Kamalayo Dasa Dasa Nadasa. So when one properly sees that no other performer is at work than these modes of nature, and our experience leads us to this Kshatriya Shraddha. And he knows the Supreme Lord, who is transcendental to these modes. Then he attains my spiritual nature. When the embodied being is able to transcend these modes associated with the material body, and we heard in the Uddhava Gita, both subtle and gross, then he can become free from birth, death, old age, and their distresses, and he can enjoy nectar even in this life. He can take something from the spiritual platform. Arjuna inquired, O my dear Lord, by what symptoms is one known who is transcendental to these three modes? What is his behavior? How does he transcend the modes of material nature? What's it like to be beyond? Not to be controlled and conditioned by the modes. And Krishna replies, O son of Pandu, he who does not hate illumination attachment and delusion when they are present. In other words, the modes come and they go, and he doesn't identify with any of them or the fruits of them. And nor does he long for them or lament for them when they appear or disappear. He's unwavering and undisturbed through all these reactions of the material qualities. He's fixed. This is all external to me. He's undisturbed. He's focused on who he actually is, serving. He remains neutral and transcendental, knowing that the modes alone are active, who is situated in the self, servant of Krishna, and he regards alike happiness and distress, like the Avanti Brahmana. He had enough of the modes. And he looks upon a lump of earth, a stone, and a piece of gold with an equal eye, who is equal towards the desirable and the undesirable. He's focused as a servant in what his service is, who is steady. He's nishta, fixed in this, situated equally in praise and blame, honor and dishonor, who treats alike both friend and enemy. He sees everyone not according to the modes that attract him or repel him, but according to who they are. They are servants of Krishna, who has renounced all material activities. He's just acting as a servant. Such a person is said to have transcended the modes of nature. Now, how to do that? How to get to that exalted platform? One who engages in full devotional service, mam chayo vyabhacharya, not without, in all circumstances, continuously, he's that fixed. I'm Krishna's servant, and I will act in such a way that pleases Krishna. He transcends the modes of nature, material nature. And then, brahma bhuyaya kalpate, sagunan samatityatan. He goes above, and he attains the platform of Brahman. And it is me, brahmanohi pratishtaham. I am the basis, I am the resting place. The Brahman is resting on me. I am the basis of impersonal Brahman. Patishta, I am the resting place, or the basis, the platform on which Brahman rests, which is immortal, imperishable, and eternal, and is the constitutional position of sukha, happiness. So that's what Krishna says in the 14th chapter. A little more detail, perhaps, in the Uddhava Gita description of the modes. But powerful, Krishna's words in the 14th chapter as well. What other chapter of the modes discussed? Conclusion of 17 is that you should work in goodness and make offerings to Krishna and goodness. Then your goodness, you jump off the good platform to the transcendental platform, out of the modes. And then 18, the conclusion is you work according to the modes and be detached from the material realm and be attached to the spiritual realm gradually, from jnana to actions, giving everything to Krishna and to bhakti. Okay, we'll stop here and ask if anyone has any questions or any comments. You wanted to read something from, you had a question and you wanted to read something from Vishwanath. So I want to read what Vishwanath had to say first.
This is the conclusion of this chapter, verse 35, where in the previous verse Krishna mentioned you do bhakti, by bhakti you become transcendental.
What's the verse number? We can just go to it.
It's in 32. He said, Bhakti Yogana, Yogena Mandi Shloma Bhavaya Prapadyate. By Bhakti Yoga, beyond, one who by Bhakti Yoga transcends is above these modes. And then at also 33 it says serving, and then in 35 in 34 and 35 he gives the gradual process by Rajas conquered Tamas, and then by Sattva Rajas and Tamas, and then Sattva by indifference, and then give it up, surrender it all to me. So Sri Vishwanath in 35 says, it has been said that if he is endowed with bhakti alone, then he will conquer the three gunas by bhakti alone. That was already stated in verse 32. Or I can read the whole. This is just a problem. Shall I read the whole commentary?
If you, whatever you like, but take your time and read it slowly or whatever, so yes, that we can.
So
if we do have time.
For 35. Or I can give
you the literary. No, you can read.
The Lord teaches the method of pure worship. One should be devoid of jnana and karma, niksanga. And then he describes different types of faiths. And Uddhava is asking, what should a person who worships you do in the beginning? This verse, 35, answers. It has been said that if one is endowed with bhakti alone, then he will conquer the three gunas by bhakti alone. That was already said in verse 32. If he has a predominance of bhakti with some mixture of other elements, that is jnana, then there is another method for conquering the three gunas that is stated in this verse. He engages in sattva to conquer rajas and tamas. It has been previously stated in Bhagavatam 11.13.6, until one realizes Atma and destroys the gunas and the gross and subtle bodies, one must use sattvika items to increase sattva, which increases dharma and then gives rise to jnana. So apparently there are two approaches to this, to getting out of the modes. One is the gradual, with bhakti mixed with jnana, with some other elements, jnana or karma yoga, and direct by bhakti alone, or probably an immediate by bhakti alone.
Immediately. So it parallels Bhagavad Gita, the yoga ladder, etc. That you can take to at any point. You can take the bhakti. Now this.
So in some other places, Sri Vishwanath Chakravarti said that these mixed forms, one can practice just by deciding to do this, whereas this pure is obtained from pure devotees. This pure bhakti is obtained from pure devotees. And then, in one of the previous chapters, this is my question. In one of the previous chapters where Krishna says that the devotee, even though unable to renounce sense enjoyment, continues to happily worship Krishna, and in the purport, he says there that he says, even if Brahma comes and offers me anything, any other process, I will refuse to accept any other process like karma and jnana. And even if I suffer, I will just continue doing bhakti. But so which karma and jnana does he reject? Because he is doing karma by enjoying. And he refuses to accept even a Brahma offering karma and jnana. He refuses to take that. But he is doing karma to enjoy and suffer. And he is also exercising jnana by knowing it's not good. And therefore lamenting and repenting.
Okay.
But then he says, I will not accept, even if Brahma comes and gives me karma and jnana, I reject. But he already does it. So what does he reject?
Well, this, first of all, this is maybe the results of jnana and karma. That's what it sounded like from what you said. Or or really the path, which is what your question was. Is he gonna you're saying he's rejecting the path, but he's actually practicing the path. But he's seeing that the path of jnana and karma are not at all what he wants. So this, if I remember this verse refers to a beginning devotee who may even fall down from the path, the perfectly following the path. And he's also not engaging in sinful activities. He's just engaging in, he's just not up to the standard. So what's, so if we take it as that he's not about the path, that he's going to stick to the path of bhakti, he's not going to, because the path of jnana is predominated by renunciation and knowledge, and the path of karma is prescribed duties according to the shastra. But the path of bhakti is the process, is hearing and chanting, based on hearing and chanting. So he's not going to, he has no desire for the, to change his path from bhakti. And also, and the result of the path he doesn't want either. He doesn't want the knowledge that comes from jnana, and he doesn't want the fruit, the pleasures that come from karma. He wants to be a servant of Krishna. So either you take it as either the path or the results of the path, he doesn't want either, even though he may not be up to the standard, the perfection of the standard. So bhakti is purifying him. Gradually, with that sincerity, he will raise his standard as well. Did I hopefully answer to the question?
Yeah, thank you. So, well, the goals and the path as practice.
Yeah.
Divorce from bhakti. And coming back to this chapter and this conclusion, so Krishna is giving two, seems to be giving two options. One is direct and one is gradual.
Well, that's, the Bhagavad Gita is also like that.
Yeah. So at the same time, we it seems we usually condemn the mixed paths, Kama Mishra, Jnana Mishra, but usually condemned. So, if a person is unable or finds himself not on the platform of pure bhakti, or what should this person do?
But pure bhakti means that you're practicing Anya Vilasita Sunyam, Jnana Kamara Navrita. You're practicing with no other desires other than for the pleasure of Krishna. So the points of if we take Jnana Mishra to mean, and Karma Mishra to mean, that we're using our karma and our jnana in the service of pure devotional service, then it's one thing. So we don't condemn that. In fact, like, renunciation is, there are qualities that aren't directly bhakti, like hearing and chanting are directly bhakti, but jnana asu vairagyam, they naturally come from bhakti. So, and it is said that in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Mahaprabhu was so pleased with the renunciation of Raghunath Das Goswami. So it's not that we condemn it as part of, you are practicing the path of jnana, but we condemn sukshma vairagya. Yeah, that's just dry. That's the basis of it. Renunciation for renunciation's purpose, and renunciation of things that are to be used in Krishna's service. So it's more subtle than us just condemning those things. And someone who has to work, he can work in such a way that it's not, that he's on the path of bhakti, and it's generally not condemned. But in some moods, devotees in their preaching condemn everything but the pure process of acting in whatever way is going to please Krishna, and giving up those attachments. So I think both types of preaching are required. And Krishna says here, this is what I was flipping, this is part of what I was saying, what I wanted to say, what I was looking for while you were speaking, is that there's two verses from Pure Devotional Service Surpasses Knowledge and Detachment, which is the chapter in the Uddhava Gita that's just prior to it's a bit ago, and there's other verses like this too. This isn't maybe the exact one I was looking for, but Krishna says Jnana Yoga is recommended for those who have seen the futility of material existence. So that's renunciation of material existence. And thus wants to become detached from fruitive activities. Karma Yoga is recommended for those who are fond of sense gratification, failing to understand the great distress that accompanies fruitive work. So that's karma and jnana. So that, and then, somehow or another, if one develops faith in hearing and chanting my glories by good fortune, neither being very disgusted with nor attached to material life, he should try to achieve perfection by following the path of loving devotion to me. So that's the adhikara is of what bhakti means. There's a predominance of attachment to hearing and chanting. So that's those who are practicing bhakti, but not that they're equal. I'd need to. There were some other references that I would have liked to have put forward, but unless I can find them in just a moment, then I won't be able to do it. But does that? Because you had asked basically the same question you asked that previously too. Yeah, it's just how much. It's basically can a practitioner of bhakti use the elements of jnana yoga or of karma yoga in the service of Krishna without it becoming jnana misra bhakti or karma misra bhakti? That's basically, I think, what your question is. So the first point is that the essential element of bhakti yoga is the emphasis on the hearing and chanting. And if we don't hear and chant sufficiently, then our karma yoga will turn into karma. I mean, our bhakti yoga that's mixed with these karmic type of activities, if we don't associate with devotees and in the association of devotees and hear and chant, we'll just end up performing karma. And same thing with the other points of jnana. They'll turn into other kinds of desires, just the desire for knowledge, and we won't be acting to please Krishna. Because again, there's the Sangha Siddha bhakti items that are bhakti, which have the seed of karma in them, but when they're used in Krishna's service, we give the fruits to Krishna really for his pleasure, then they're bhakti. And then there's the arupa, that's arupa, and then the Sangha Siddha bhakti, the qualities that are so useful in bhakti, such as detachment. And if we don't have the quality of detachment, for example, then our bhakti can get in so much trouble. So they can be used in Krishna's service, but unless our life is predominated by hearing and chanting, they'll take up an independent life aside from bhakti. So in that analysis, it's the items of hearing and chanting that are really emphasized and really glorified. And if we could live our life just by hearing and chanting and glorifying Krishna and remembering Krishna, then we can do it. But because it's not so easy to do that, we take those other items and and baptize them, so to speak, and you know, and remove them from elements of other paths and put them as assistants on the path of bhakti. Anyway, that's how I would answer that. Like Thakur Haridas, Raghunath Das Goswami, they didn't independently think of any other methodology other than hearing and chanting, and they certainly achieved all the results of everything else. So if we're unable to do that, we can, you know, we might spend some time emphasizing, we might practice austerities in the Brahmacharya Ashram to break our detachments, our attachments, and practicing particular kinds of austerities and living simply, because that's the prescription that has been made for us by a spiritual physician that will help us. Yeah, so does that satisfy? Okay. And one shouldn't prescribe for oneself too. I think I need a little more karma mixed in my life, you know. How much should I take? I think this much. Or at least if one is prescribing for oneself, once you get it confirmed and take the confirmation is more authoritative than our own prescription for ourselves. Because very often we don't like what a doctor tells us. He tells us to stop eating sweets and stop eating fried things and you know, do more exercise and all kinds of things that are troublesome. Yeah, let me just. Yeah, and so continuation.
If I properly understood, it's a question of a very precise balancing. Two tendencies. One tendency is to act, another tendency is to renounce. But without bhakti, this becomes almost an impossible act of balance, very difficult. But these are our tendencies, either to enjoy or bhog and dhyan. And only bhakti gives us a third alternative which would automatically balance these two. But
if we're in bhakti.
Yes, yes. So that's why we
if we are actually attached to hearing and chanting, if we actually get some attachment to Krishna generated somehow or another by the mercy of the association of devotees,
yes,
then that, yeah, that will balance.
So that's why we need a bhakta to actually attune us to what bhakti actually means. Otherwise, we will disguise our bhoga and tyaga, or karma and jnana, as bhakti, and again, there will be no balance under the disguise of bhakti.
Yes, but also not only do we need to be attuned, we have to stop in every once in a while for a checkup.
Keep being attuned.
In other words, we need to be under someone who will make adjustments.
Will present the real positive third thing.
But not only that, but give us adjustments as to how our application of the process has been, how we've assimilated it, and you know, how we're practically applying it. Yeah. Follow what I mean? In other words, you know, this is what I'm doing, and this is how I'm doing it. I've understood it and put the pieces together. And then we go to a consulting physician, you know, to tell us accept, reject, or make further adjustments. Follow what I mean? Yeah, simple. But you really want to go to someone who is really healthy. Any other? Yeah, we owe you one from before. You had a comment.
No, not from before. Srivastava was a perfect example of that. How to be a devotee in any situation, given being in a family situation.
But all of Mahaprabhu's, so many of Mahaprabhu's associates were householders. They somehow, where is it said that, you know, you find a situation that's comfortable for you and to progress in? And what's good for one is not necessarily good for others too, depending upon one's capacity. And because the conditioned soul tends to be envious, they look at others and tend to think, oh, I want to be like that, but maybe we don't have the capacity to be like that. So therefore, you need a physician. You need someone serving you as guru in that way. You say, you do it this way, that seems to be best for you. Because we don't want to go under our capacity, but we don't want to go over our capacity either. So, but we can, you know, there's two ways to do it. You can say that, tell me what to do, or here's what I think is best, please confirm or deny. You know, it depends on, or adjust. So there's different situations, different individuals require different adjustments and things.
It's a bit controversial, I don't know if you want to pick it up.
Not now. But a little later, maybe.
Question.
Okay, but let me, because I saw.
Connected to this.
Okay, as long as it's connected.
How is it practically possible to do this personal guidance in case of a person with thousands of disciples or hundreds of disciples?
Well, you need, if one has a Shiksha Guru who's nearby. That's certainly make it a lot easier. Yeah, why not? And also ultimately, you know, if there's no one around like that, I mean, that's Krishna's gift if he gives us someone who can advise us, and we see them as representatives of, or they are acting as representatives of Krishna too. And you don't want to have the Shiksha Guru, there'll be disharmonious instructions from the Diksha Guru. So if they're in concordance and harmony, then it makes it simpler. And there's also Krishna as the Chaitya Guru, and there's the books too. But ideally, it's so much easier if there's someone right there who will help us and guide us, you know, can say no. Because we have such a capacity to fool ourselves. Who else has a question? Raise your hand. I'm going to choose. Do I want to call it? Yes. I wanted to actually call him Bhagwan Baba, but after.
The question to clarify whether Bush was asking. Few times I heard spiritual masters or instructors telling the subordinates that if you are really that materialistic and you can't do anything for Krishna directly, you do things you are doing, and then in the end of the day you say, oh Krishna, these things I did for, let me offer this to you, like offer in the end of the day your activities for Krishna. So it sounds a little strange, because you know, during the day you were doing things in the modes of nature, you know, doing this, doing that, and then you were not doing it for Krishna, you were already doing it for yourself or for something else, and then you take this and you try to offer it to Krishna. Where is the border? Because you know there is a story which Srila Prabhupada Saraswati used to say, like, a Brahmana goes with the packet of the puff rice, and the wind blows, the puff rice goes in air and falls on the
Gopal Bog.
Very quickly.
Please, Gopal, you can take it.
Yeah. So, if it's not, you know, where, how is it a bhakti? Is it a bhakti really?
Well, there's two ways to look at it according to our acharyas. One, it is bhakti because although it's not pure devotional service, it's still in the category of karma yoga. But it, because it leads to bhakti, it's considered to bhakti, because even a great journey begins with a small step. And the other way to look at it is the more strict interpretation, until you're surrendered, then it's not bhakti. It's not bhakti until Krishna, the act is also offered to Krishna. So if someone has a family and they're working and they have a job and they're giving they have so many material desires, but they give something to Krishna. So we don't discourage that, because everyone needs encouragement, and that's the glory of the Vedic path, that it encourages people, because without encouragement we go backwards, we lose our faith. And then there's someone who has a job, a house and a job, and that person is not attached, but he just takes what he needs and uses the rest in Krishna's service. So that's he's considering that, and he's using his work in Krishna's, the work itself in Krishna's service too. So that's a different level of something that superficially might appear the same. Householder has a job. So there are different levels.
It all depends on the person's mentality.
Well, that's but we expect the mentality to reflect its way into the activities too, as they naturally do, because the activities ultimately reveal the mentality, what you do.
So if you strive for Bhakti and praise for that day, then he will start to do it directly.
Well, that's what happens, is you're humble, you know that, and that's what explains in the Bhagavad Gita that in the 13th chapter, because they have a tendency to hear from others. They have no knowledge, but because of their tendency to hear from others, they will also transcend. Because if you participate, the thing is that we want everyone to participate in the process of association with devotees and hearing and chanting. And that purifies one quite quickly if one does it with an innocent and good heart. So if someone walks in the temple or somewhere and we just say, you're not pure yet, it's like saying, putting a sign in the hospital, only we don't allow any sick people here. So under the kind and affectionate association with devotees who are attached to hearing and chanting, then all good comes from it. What chapter is that in again? 8.
This verse?
Yeah. Yes.
The 13th, as you said, yeah. It's about 24.
Yeah. And then there's another one, because then even if one can't rise to the highest standard, because one is not envious of the process,
it's about
3:30. One advances in that way. So very much depends on the heart. And the heart very much depends on association. So if the hospital kicked out all the rascals, or the sick rascals of Prabhupada, kicked out all the rascals, he would have been all alone. So therefore, you know, we have our books, and by hearing and chanting and some sincerity and some humility, we move forward in the process. Any other questions? Yes, please.
In the third temple, we already heard from Maitreya Muni. And what I understood from your explanation is that if one is not adhikar of attachment to hearing and chanting constantly, then a combination of bhakti with dhyana yoga or bhakti with karma yoga may be required. So was Maitreya Muni, who has been considered a dhyana nishtha bhakti yoga, in that case? And also I'm wondering, why is this person not mentioned in the Buddha Gita, as he was also present?
Okay, which I got bewildered by the last part of the question.
First question is, was Maitreya Muni, who has been considered as a dhyana nishtha bhakti yoga, in that case, in the case that he did not have the adhikar of attachment, appearing and standing, and had to combine with the other yogas.
But when, as far as I remember, that before he met Krishna in Prabhas, put it in the positive. After meeting Krishna in Prabhas, he understood that the goal was Vaikuntha, the spiritual world. So at that time, he actually became a devotee. So when someone is a pure devotee and is so qualified to that he had Krishna's association in that way, and Krishna arranged that he would be there, why do we call him a Jnanamisrabhakti Bhakta? Maybe after that his practices, he was very detached, he wandered in the world, but his heart had changed completely, but he spoke about Krishna. So why are we saying that he's a Jnanamisrabhakti? Who was it in Paramananda Puri? He was very much into meditation. So did that make him a yogi? He was meditating on Krishna. So you could say he's a yogi, Shraddhavan Bhajate Yomam, but he's not that kind of yogi. He's not a yoga Mr. Bhakta. He was one of the roots of the. So I don't know if that answers. So much so that Uddhava was confident enough in him to send Vidura, Vidu there to hear from him. That he wasn't going to teach him Gyan as the goal. Yeah, did you want to add something?
A question to this. So this section studying this section can be done as pure bhakti, or studying this same section could probably done also as
Jnanamisrabhakti. Well, it could also. We have to define what you mean by Jnanamisrabhakti there, because I always get confused by the term. Does it mean that practicing bhakti to gain the fruit of jnan, which is sometimes used? It's sometimes used like that, or to practice bhakti mixed.
Bhakti Mishra Jnan. That's okay. Gaudiya Bhakti. Second bhakti is secondary. But Pradhanya Bhakti, to gain Bhakti, to gain Krishna, to gain love of Krishna, but through detachment and analytical, with the help of Bhagavatam.
With the help of, or it's predominated by the Bhagavatam, by hearing and chanting. Look what someone like Maitreya Muni, he wasn't going out in the forest and just meditating on and saying. Yeah, he was talking about Krishna to Vidura. So okay,
my question was if you would like to comment, what would be the difference in motivations to make studying these Sankhya Yoga parts?
Oh yeah, well also you can be sure that the impersonalists love the Uddhava Gita too. I mean, there are other ways to translate it. They love it, but here's the proof of, you know, there's so many mentions of oneness of this and oneness of that, and they probably, obviously, they go to.
This is obvious. This is what we obviously reject. But I mean, a more subtle between Kevala Bhaktas and Pradhanya Bhaktas, who are also externally practicing everything, and their goal is bhakti, and their goal is Krishna.
So since Raghunath Das Goswami was so renounced, was he a Jnanamisra Bhakti? No, why?
Because his motivation was not, and attachments were not to the.
But when you're very very deep into one, into the bhakti part, that completely takes over all the rest and dictates all the rest. And then these distinctions don't really come up. Like, and Prabhupada speaks about this when the Bhagavatam was in the first canto of the Bhagavatam was in three sections. there was a preface that Prabhupada wrote to the first section, in the second volume, the preface. He writes about, here I am going to the paper markets and this and that, and wandering around Chandni Chowk, and people are thinking, you've left Vrindavan and you're still, and you're a businessman, you're a sannyasi, and you lived in Vrindavan, you're a businessman, and you're collecting money. But because externally it was some type of karma yoga or something like that, but the motivation of his desire to please Krishna was dominated and changed everything into pure devotional service. And you could say, well, that was kirtanam, but you know, it looked very much like workanam, you know. But it was in the service of it. So Prabhupada always insisted on that level, that everything should be used in the service of Krishna. Everything can be, everything must be. The working, everything becomes devotional service in that way. But the consciousness has to be right. This is really done for Krishna, from the beginning to the end. This is my motivation. Then it doesn't make a difference what you did, whether the gopis were milking the cows, or the cowherd men were plowing the fields, or dressing themselves, or there was no karma or jnana in it, because they were spontaneously in love with Krishna. So when one is highly devoted and Krishna conscious, then these discriminations don't exist, because it's only pleasing Krishna. But when one is less than that, as some of us may be, we want to make sure that our that Krishna is really the center, because you can renounce something. I keep using the example of renunciation, because it goes both ways. You can renounce something that is Krishna's and useful for Krishna, or you can renounce something springing from your bhakti. So if you get too attached to the renunciation part, it could cause you trouble later on, which goes back to the original part of your question. That we want, and therefore the hearing and chanting and good association is so required, so that these other parts, the Arupa Siddha, which are the terms that I'm more familiar with, and the Sangha Siddha, bhakti, the karma and jnana things that are converted to bhakti by their being used in the service of Krishna, don't give forth seeds and fruits of karma and jnana. So the Sarup Siddha Bhakti parts, the hearing and chanting and association, and other things that are directly potent with bhakti, have to become the dominant. We want them to become the dominant part of our consciousness, and if they're minimized for the work or other parts, it's dangerous for our spiritual life. Did that add anything or complete anything?
So if I want to please Krishna by my chanting, but I am on a low level and riddled with anarthas, and therefore I take this shloka, Trinada Visunishnada Riva Sahishna, and I work on these qualities of respect and humility, then this will be, but my sole purpose is Harinam, for pleasing Krishna.
And so how to do that in such a way that it won't take you away from Krishna's service, but it will bring you even closer to Krishna's service, should be done under guidance.
Will it even be classed as Sangha Siddha Bhakti if it's done within, for, and out of bhakti?
And if it's done when one's consciousness is predominated by the other elements of bhakti too. Because if you spend all day long trying to be humble and you have no time to chant your rounds.
In chanting and while chanting the whole day, but also consciously practicing humility? So will it even be, but just for chanting, will it even be classed as Sangha Sila?
No, if it's naturally coming from your consciousness that I want to serve Krishna. But I'm saying if you're consciously aware that, oh, I'm so fallen, I have so many bad, and therefore I can't take shelter of you, Krishna, which is how it naturally comes, so certainly that's not going to be anything. It's just, it's come committed. It come automatically follows. It's not independently being cultivated, it's just part of the what naturally happens to the consciousness when one chants. So one that's the point of Gyanirajya Asu Vairagyam. If you practice bhakti practically, all these other things will come. They must come. As products of bhakti, of the soul, practically, of the soul's relationship with Krishna. I think everyone is. So tomorrow, but there's two chapters. I don't know for how much time we're going to have for questions as we race through. But if we can, we could ask, because I know I saw that many devotees had other questions. But I don't want to keep everyone late. Okay, thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Gita ki jai, Sri Bhagavad Gita ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srila Prabhupada. Bhaktivinoda ki jai.